All right, lads. This week we are joined by Anthony Tosh Farrell. He's one of Britain's most influential football coaches, nurturing talents such as Wayne Rooney, Ross Barkley, Jack Rodwell, and many more. He's been at Everton since 1997 and recently left the club. So I hope you enjoy this one. There's a lot of golden nuggets in it.
But you were at Everton, were you, for until
1997. I went to Everton. I got played a little bit of semi pro, okay non league, and then we went when I was packing up. I was doing a playing refereeing. I got involved in refereeing before I got involved in the coaching. And when I was reffing about 32, and the nonsense coming on from the sidelines, to the lads, all ages, whether they were under sevens or under 17 or adult, it was loads of gobbledygook coming off the sides. And I thought I'll get myself a little bit of, background, bit of coaching, get myself coaching, done the old prelim. It wasn't level twos in those days, the old prelim. Got myself done on that. And then got the bug on the coaching stay, and started chasing it more for the knowledge, not for the badges, more for the knowledge, and the knowledge I gained on that week's course. I packed in the referee, and I ended up playing for a higher level. It was crazy. Little bits of information, like they're saying, just check your shoulders and stuff like that. Back in the day was, the eureka moment for me. And, I'm not saying for 1 minute I would have been a professional player, but because I played at a higher level longer, with the information of coaching, yeah, without a doubt.
Well, that's a thing. It's you can't really measure in a way, but when you've got like so many kids and there might be 12, and a lot of kids have just got that natural talent. Like, what is it that takes them to that next level of professionalism where it's like they've got the snap in the pass, or they can pass it without looking, and it's the positional play, what things like that.
But I mean, it depends what ages that you're looking at. I mean, if you're looking at, I got involved in the recruitment when I was at Everton after, from 97 to 2000. I was involved in the community program, which was, brilliant in helping me develop as a coach, and if you want to call it a talent spotter. That really helps, because you're working with kids of all abilities, and they're up peaks and troughs, aren't they? They all learn at different rates, boys and girls, and working with them. Although it wasn't a route I would have picked if I was given a choice, it would have been straight get me to the first team, let me be, Southgate's assistant manager in the World Cup. That opportunity was given to me, and it was only when I reflect, I realised just what a fantastic opportunity and learning experience that was. Because we've seen kids at 7 and 8 who played with enthusiasm. I mean, somebody would say now to you, can they get around the pitch? Well, if they're enthusiastic, that is my get around the pitch, because they do. Their enthusiasm takes them all around the pitch. So I like to see enthusiasm. And then they get coming to coaches, and for some reason, the enthusiasm is sort of drained from them. And that's my bit of beef, I suppose, with coaches. And I'm a coach as well, so I'm not saying everybody else, it's everybody else is wrong than me. I was part of it where the pressure of coaching, sitting at an academy, sort of reflected you felt the teams that you were developing, if they were winning, you were a good coach. If they were losing, you were a bad coach. And there was times then some of your coaching might have been a little bit, if we lost on the weekend, reactive coaching. If we lost the weekend, we're doing defending, or if we haven't scored enough, we're doing shooting. And it's only with age and experience that, you come away from that, and you start realizing that the kid's a lot more than what you're giving them. And it's not about the team, it's about the one. Because, Wayne, if I just jump around the place with Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney was involved in a team that got smashed off Liverpool, absolutely smashed. But if my memory serves me right, Wayne's the only one of those two groups that went on to achieve what he's achieved and play at that level.
Yeah.
So we won that game because sometimes you have to learn to lose, and shows character and things like that, doesn't it? Personality. It shows that. So there's lots of little things that you can, as a coach, add to the mix.
Mm.
But getting the right ingredients to make one good mix is the key.
What age group was that then at the time? You're describing Rooney there. What age you been?
I'm pretty sure it was probably a year 11. A year 11. But Wayne would have only been a 10. I mean, Wayne always played up. I mean, he never played down. He only played his own age range or up, Wayne. But that was like at a young age. I'm sure Liverpool would say, you know, that happened to us. We got smashed off somebody and one of our players come through. And good on them.
Yeah.
And good on them, because if it was about the one, they've achieved the goal.
Mm.
What do you think it is with, some of the modern-day academies now? What do you think they can spot in a player so early? Because I've mentioned this before. He's my godson and my little cousin. He got spotted from Man City when he was 5, just like, Saturday League, just knocking the ball around. And I think, what can you see at 5, in a player where you think he's got something there that I can see that can be coached? And, they asked him up to the stadium and everything else. And do you think, like you've just said there, it's that enthusiasm? Or do you think sometimes in the modern-day academies, they're looking more for athleticism, as you've just described?
Well, I object to under-5s going to academy.
Yeah, I think it's too young, 100%.
I think it's gross. I think it's obscene. I think they should be left alone if it was down to me. And it's not a game of a talented under-5. It's a game of interception that academies play. I was part of the community. I was part of the schools program that would go in, identify players who look as if they enjoy football and encourage them to come to the club. But if you went in at year 10, another club would go in at year 9. And it's a bit like Tom O'Connor named that tune. How low do you want to go?
Yeah.
And I don't believe, I can't believe that players, anybody can identify a player at 5. I'm not having it. I mean, I'm 30-odd years into it. You bring a 5-year-old into me, there's no way I would say he's going to be a player. And I think what backs me up on that is how many under-5s are in all these programs. How many kids are recruited to age groups? They've got about 20 and 30 kids in a group. Mm. Now, if Manchester United have got 30 in their under, let's call them under-7s, let's say they're under-7s because they recruit them, bring them into the programme that early. And Man City have got 30 under-7s, and Liverpool have got 30 under-7s, and Man United and Everton have got 30 under-7s. That's an awful lot of kids.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot of kids. And when you look at that there's, less than 1% actually make it.
Yeah.
It's madness, absolute madness. It shouldn't be there, in my opinion. But if they knew, they'd take less and they would see it through. But recruitment rules right now in academy football, it's all about recruitment. And some players making their debuts for whatever Premier League club, they're getting classed as an academy prospect, and they've probably only been there about 6 or 7 months. They were probably paid for and bought from another club. I mean, as good as Dom Calvert-Lewin is, he's Sheffield United's player. And yet Everton get the academy. I'm not being they're the rules. It's the way from within them. But I've seen academy players identifying the likes of Jose Baxter, Jose Baxter, under seven. He was identified, stayed with us and made his debut. Adam Forshaw, who else came through on that? Cal McManaman left, although, you know, he's gone. Jack Rodswell. We, you know, Martin Waldron, who was, and we worked like hand in glove, me and Martin, but we were quite good and we supported each other. We would go, and rather than Martin just say, I'm bringing a player in, Martin would say to me, come and have a look at this player. We'd go, I'd look at certain things, Martin would look at it, you know, from a scouting point of view. We combine our experiences, and 9 times out of 10, we agreed on bringing the player in. And I think when I look at the last group that we recruited, we had it down to a fine art. I mean, you're talking about Liam Walsh, Kieran Dowell, Callum Connolly. I mean, that was a top group that we recruited at a U8. They're fantastic players, and you know, I know Kieran's not there. He's going to be a late one for Everton, and I personally think he'll regret having sold him because he's a talent. Walshy just romped with Coventry, player of the season, all supporters, player of the season. He got everything last year. He's just moved to another club now. Quality players, but he stayed there to the end.
So you yourself, then you must have you. Would you say in the hundreds you've coached players who've gone on to be full-on professional footballers then? What is it?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, you know, I don't chase the numbers, Steve, in terms of I did him. I mean, I have a website and I have some, you know, the players I helped, but that's not counting, you know, the Irish League, the League of Wales, the playing abroad in Poland and something like that. I mean, I was trying to, you know, just the locally lads' names. Most of them are local lads. And, you know, I get more satisfaction out of helping the local lads because I felt that's what the academy was for.
Yeah, yeah.
Academies were for developing our own. But we seem to be spending money on somebody else's investment.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to mention that. Sorry to put in there, Steve. Yeah, you think there's been a shift in, you know, the academies of late? Because I remember at Liverpool a few years back, Rodolfo Borrell was brought in as the head of the academy at Liverpool. I think it was just before Alex Inglethorpe. And now Rodolfo's working under Pepe at Man City and, you know, doing a great job. But I remember a very obvious shift in players that were being developed locally, like Conor McGregor. I was just talking to Steve about Conor McGregor. He was meant to be an all right footballer,
Celtic Academy.
I meant Conor Cody, you know, these type of lads were coming through, Flano, all them type of lads. But then all of a sudden we started importing foreign talents, paying for them, as you've said, you know, claiming the property of the academy. But do you think there's been a shift with that? Because like you've said there, in my opinion, and I agree, the academy is for your local lads to bring through the local talents and your local girls as well. But it seems like now, you know, we're just looking for those sexy foreign names to come into the academies early on.
Yeah, well, that you know, that was my point before, recruitment rules. And we, you know, and you mentioned Conor Coles, I mean, I knew Conor from under seven. We had Conor at 7 and 8 at Everton. But prior to that, we had an independent centre of excellence up in St. Helens that Conor attended. And, you know, he's smashing kid. The thing is, all the players in this area, in the country, you haven't got to be the best player in the city anymore to be a professional player. You've got to be one of the best in the country, if not Europe, to get into Liverpool's team. I hope further down the line, Everton can say that. But certainly Man United, Man City, Liverpool, you've got to be one of the top players in the world to represent their team. So the bar has been raised there. But when you come down and, you know, and we're using Everton as maybe, say, let's say that middle tier, where's all the local players there? I mean, they're not getting a shout. You, you know, how far are you going down? I mean, Brighton are the ones who seem to be giving players, academy prospects, players the opportunity. And, you know, I've got a lot of time for Graham Potter.
Good coach.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for him. But what's the point of having talent if you haven't got the, you know, if you're not given the opportunity to perform? And I just feel that either something's wrong in terms of the players coming into the programme, your selection process from that early age is not what it could and should be. And then you've got to say, is your development programme getting them through or getting them up to the level they should be? Now, if you use Chelsea's model is, let's recruit them, let's develop them, let's sell them. I mean, and you get millions for them. But, you know, it's whatever business model they're following. But most academies, I'm assuming, and again, Tranmere, you know, let's talk about Tranmere. Had a fantastic academy when Warwick Grimmer was there. They produced more players and more value than any academy put together. I mean, their academy was run on a shoestring, maybe 250 grand, and the players they managed to get through and sell, when relatively speaking to what academies are spending, they were quids in front, they were miles in front, but they were local players as well.
Yeah,
I believe that the opportunity is still there for the players. I do.
Do you think the clubs owe the academy graduates when they've made it into the under-18s and then they're in the under-21s, do they owe them players a debt in a way to actually give them a run in the first team? Or is it too cutthroat, too much of a business where... So the clubs have been nurturing a kid, let's say, from the age of 8, and they've brought him all the way through. And then once he's ready, there's a lot of players that don't get played in that club's first team. So, for example, at Liverpool, we've got Harry Wilson, who's had a great stint on every loan spell. He's through the academy. We've praised him since he was a young kid, and he's just never been given a chance in the first team. You know, there's a lot of players like that, but he's just an example. Do you think the clubs at first team level sort of owe these players a debt sometimes to deputise them and give them a run? Otherwise, what are they developing them for sometimes? Yeah.
You know. If you're saying what they're developing them for, and if we go back to the structure stage, David, you can't have the best under 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s, 13s, right the way through to under 23 teams. You can't.
Yeah.
Man United, it's about the players within those groups. It's about the one. It's about the one. So, you know, why not have, you know, if it's about the one, the other 10 are there for me. You know, the academy is helping me by supporting me with 10 players who, by the grace, you know, more by the, in spite of a system, one or two of them get through than because of it, because they're putting all their eggs in the basket with me, trying to get me through. And when it comes to contracts at 16, and if we've got young lads at academies, and, you know, David's mentioned there, somebody at 5 at Man City, that's 11 years at an academy. And when it comes to offering pro contracts, the academy manager or the academy coach says, we're not sure. We'll take another couple of months to look at you. Let's review it in March. And if you meet our standards in March, we'll sign you. My question is, what have you been doing for fucking 11 years?
Oh, yeah, well, that's it. It must be a psychological blow on the kid himself, because obviously working through it. And then it's like, oh, hang on, if I don't get signed on here, well, I've been working for this myself for 11 years. You know, it's hard. Not many people are even in that position. So I'm just wondering what it must be like on the kid's mental health and things like that. Or, you know.
And that's the big one, isn't it? I mean, if you're released, I mean, how you can release a 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, a 10-year-old from academy football, and I'm looking in hindsight now, you know, because I suppose, you know, when I was in there and novice, just learning, giving a role and making decisions on players, it was wrong. How can you write an under 9s, 10s, 11s-year-old footy career off? You don't know how big they're going to grow. You don't know if their heads are going to stay screwed on right the way through. So I just don't get it.
Yeah.
But the other side of the coin is, if you're in our academy, Steve, and you were signed at 5 and we retained at 6, 7, all the way through to 16, you must think, and rightly so with your parents, who, by the way, have sacrificed like you wouldn't believe, driving you around up and down the country, paying for this, paying for that, massive conflicts with your family, because if you're one of 3, 4, or 5 kids and you've been pushed there at Everton, what really has happened with the rest of the kids there? Have they had a balance? You know, am I getting to my badminton lessons? Mm. My sister wants to get to Wimbledon. You know, are we pushing her down the tennis route? Are they getting the same opportunities? So let's say the parents have sacrificed everything for you, you know, and then come 16, you must think, why would I be getting released if kept me for 11 years? Yeah. But that is the conversation. Sorry, we can't sign you. And that's the bit that doesn't sit comfortable with me in academy football. But, you know, the reason why they're taken too early, I do believe they learn more at grassroots, mixing, playing with different abilities. And, you know, and I'm sorry to get on a soapbox here, but I just feel that if I'm a dribbler, right?
Yeah.
And I'm at Man City, if they've got defenders, they're going to be defenders who are quite good.
Yeah.
Right. So how do I develop my dribbling, playing up all the time against somebody who's really proficient?
Yeah.
I need to go and experiment, fine-tune my moves on the grassroots. You know, this week we're playing the Fish Market 11. Oh, Steve plays for the Fish Market 11. I know I can get round him.
You get past me.
I've seen him play, Dave. The following week we're playing against Dave. He's a good one. I learn how to combine. My way of getting round, you know, I might have to combine with a mate.
Yeah.
I don't do the moves I've done against Steve because you're bigger, you run a bit faster, you're a bit more savvy.
He's definitely watched me, Annie, Steve, definitely. Yeah.
But you must have watched them with your glasses off.
Yeah. But, you know, academies will say, well, you'll get that because you're playing different academy levels.
Yeah.
But the same structure goes out every week. I mean, they don't do this, don't do that. Try to play like this. You practice. I mean, the world's mad. It's an upside down world on production, isn't it? Liverpool's Anfield, is it a 3G or is it grass?
Oh, Anfield's grass. The actual.
Oh, yeah, if Goodison right now is that grass or grass?
Grass, aren't they?
Yeah. And we spend all our years coaching them on AstroTurf.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the game's played on grass. It's not played on AstroTurf.
Yeah.
So the ball doesn't bobble. It comes smooth. It's like a billiard table.
Yeah.
But you try to bring those skills and techniques to your Saturday side on the grass at Club Moor or the Campfield or wherever. Suddenly the ball's bouncing. It's coming around your throat. It's a divot. It's come up. They're skills that we're not developing in players, in my opinion, that all the players from years ago brought with them. You know, I'm a lot older than you are, like, but the George Best, the Rodney Marshes, the, you know, all the entertainers, they learnt on fields that had been ploughed, that had been levelled.
You think of people like, obviously you've mentioned Rooney there and people like Fowler. They were always labelled as street footballers, weren't they? Specifically those two lads, because they just had that tenacity in the game and a bit like the meanness that you learn. Because when you're playing Saturday, Sunday league, when you're like 10, 11, you're on a full-size pitch now, aren't you, at 11? Massive goals and, like, you know, there's always a couple of ringers on there kicking the shit out of you. But you learn a bit more of the craft of the game, don't you? And when we spoke to John a few months back, we were talking about, like, the centres of excellence, like, you know, the Vernon Sangster and all these places that like that was the first step, weren't it? If you were any cop, you'd get in there, the coaches would get older and have a look at you. And I think a lot of that's gone now. So it is good to see, you know, the likes of what you're doing and what, you know, Carrot and Fowler are picking up at Melwood as well, because the kids do need that. But just if I can go back to when you started Everton at 97, didn't you? Yeah.
97, yeah.
Was you in Everton, the community then? Was that set up then, Everton, in the community?
We called the Magnificent Seven. There were seven of us. All started at the city. Yes, we started there from there for 3 years.
Yeah, I worked in the community a bit myself for a few years, and it's a fantastic place to work. And
Ted Sutton at the time.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Sunbed Ted, we used to call him.
Who was first team manager then for the Blues?
Howard.
Was it Howard back then?
Yeah. So
in the time you was at Everton, who were the managers you were under? Was it Howard Moisey and was there another?
No, Howard Kendall was the manager at the time there. Colin was head of youth. Then followed Walter. Walter Smith came with Archie. Then David Moyes. You know, that I left Jordan Dave's tenure.
What was like when you started to get into the role yourself a bit more? Did you find there was a different level of engagement with the first team managers? You know, was Walter more engaged than David, or you know, was David very hands on with what you guys were doing, or was you just kind of left to it?
And I was real lucky, Dave, because my world, like, initially started looking after the 7s to 11s program. Well, it was indoor. And the only indoor facility Everton had was Belfield.
Yeah.
So all our training was done there. And when we split sites, the teenagers, the 12, the 13s, 14s, 15s, 16s, they went to Netherton. But I remained at Belfield. So I grew quite close to Walter, Archie, Dave Moyes, Steve Round. You know, got real Alan Irvine. It was in the players. I mean, the players used to come in. I used to be brilliant, Dave. I mean, Lee Carsley used to come in. They're all doing the coaching badges and stuff like that. And I was at the time, I was a FA tutor, and I could sign the logbooks with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they used to say, sign this. And I wouldn't sign it. I'd say, you've got to get in with the lads. I said, I can only really see you with the lads. Bart, Mark, Pembridge, all these players. And Lee Carsley come in. And I always remember it was like our street football day. I used to say to all the lads it was like an additional session, 4 till 5 on a Tuesday. Come in any kit you want. I said, we'll have a game indoors, 77, 20 by 20, depends how many comes up. And this day, we've got about 14 sides. Most of them are in Liverpool kits, honestly. But they've all got whatever name it is on the back, whether it was all number 9 Fowler, but you know, on back there. So we've all got the same shirts on. There's a few Evertons there, a few Man U's, the odd Man City pump. So Cars comes in and says, what's happening? I said, the lads are going to pick the side. Right. So Chris Long, who actually stayed right through, thinks that, where did Longy, was he just signed for now, Longy? He wants a champion, I said. Anyway, I'll find out. But Chris Long was one of them, and I think it was Cal Mack was the other one. So they're picking sides, and I said, Lee's playing. Nobody picked him, right? So he's last on, so he's last pick. So we're having a joke, like, you know, and the game's going on, and Lee being a player, he's not taking it serious. He's just, no need to get involved here. And these were quite lively, the players. And you have all the parents used to stand around the sides of Belfield, and this is indoors, and Longy nutmegs Cars, right through the legs and scores. And I said, I shouted to Lee, can't mess around at this level. This isn't first team. This is the proper stuff. Next minute, Cars is getting a right sweat on, running around the place. But he was there regular. Pem, Dave Unsworth, Stubbsy, all used to come in. But the manager, you know, Moyes, you know, Walter used to stand against the wall laughing at them. He'd shout, I've seen enough, Tosh, you know.
Yeah.
I know me seeing for Saturday. It used to be brilliant. But the lads, but they responded. The kids responded to them. Mm. Responded. And that them little bits of information that the players who were on the coaching journey just saying to, learning to speak to 9 to 10, 11, 12, you know, young kids, starting that role, if you want. It was brilliant, and the kids loved it, and obviously the parents were all taking the pictures, not in the numbers that you can do today, but they were fantastic. Great tears.
Priceless for the kids, that, isn't it? You know, just having a kickabout with first-team players as well. Like, I think that's part of the reason they're trying to integrate Melwood with Kirby, isn't it? As well, I believe, to get the first team closer to the
academy lads.
On the Liverpool side now. I was reading that the other week, but now it's going ahead this season. Yeah, but did you learn anything? Did Moyes or the managers ever say, not under the wing, but, you know, is there anything you learned from them and that took you on to another level as a coach as well with all the experience they had?
Yeah, well, I'll use Alan Irvin, you know, who's this, you know, system manager. I mean, I used to hang, and still do, hang on words what Alan said to me. I remember when Alan was, he was academy manager at Newcastle before he came to Everton with Moyes. He said to me, you can see us. He said, every time we play Everton, Tosh, he said, we know the Everton players by what they do and the habits, they got the good habits, checking the shoulders or blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was a great compliment for the academy. You know, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then years later, when Alan came into the academy, he said to me, where's the dribbler, Tosh? I showed him up Callum McManaman, by the way. He said, where's the dribbler? And he said, I said, there he is over there. He said, why isn't he dribbling? And, you know, without throwing people under the bus, he'd moved out of my remit, so to think, into a teenage year. And I just shrugged my shoulders. And he said, a bit of advice. He says, if you've got a great dribbler, why do you want to turn him into a great tackler?
Yeah.
And it is, you know, I took that as let them coach them what they're good at. They need to do that.
Yeah.
Don't sacrifice everything that brought them to the club to turn them into something else. And, you know, that I think that's what we have at academies now. All those, when you say what do you see in a young player, and I use the word enthusiasm for, you know, enjoying it, smiling, not fearless. I'm fearless, not talking about in a tackle here. Talking fearless, not scared to make a mistake.
Yeah.
Why suddenly is that pressure put on them where they're only 70-80% of the player they was and 70-80% of the player they could be?
Mm. I always felt like that with Wayne a little bit when he went to United, because just speaking of, you know, meeting players when you're young, I'm a few years younger than Wayne, might be able to tell, but I won a couple of medals, like with me under 11s, under 12s team. And Rooney was in the academy at the time, and it was not long before he'd scored the goal against Arsenal. So he was on the cusp of, you know, being in the first team. But we all knew about him, and like, my half fella was a blue. Obviously, I take after my ma being a big red and that, but he was known in the city. And when we met him, he seemed massive. He was just only 15, 16, but he seemed huge. And I just remember seeing him thinking, he's an animal. And when he played for Everton, the word you used there, fearless, he was absolutely fearless. I remember him, like, against Leeds, his second or third goal, he literally stood up, like, I think it was Lucas Radebe or someone, and was, like, trying to tackle me. And he just did him and got inside and buried it. But when he went to United, he was absolutely world-class. There's no denying that. But I don't know whether it's because he had better players around him, so he sacrificed himself more, especially when Ronaldo come in and what have you, because Ronaldo was there before him. But I never felt like he was as fearless as he was at Everton. And I think that happens with players when they get a little bit older. They're in their head a bit too much, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think experience comes in. I mean, you look at the Euros when took part in the Euros. He was in every part of the pitch, wasn't he?
You know, he was an animal, yeah.
He was everywhere, and he was... Zidane, he was doing a Maradona pass, Zidane and players like that. But as you get more experience, you realise that you can't do that. And the demands on the game get faster and faster, and the energy it takes. You can't be on the ball 100% of the time. So you start being a little bit more economical, I would say, with when you do and when you don't. And you know, when you say lost a little bit of that fearless, I think at Everton he knew he was the best player in the team at 15 and 16.
He was,
and, you know, I'm not, and, you know, and I'm trying. I don't mean to be disrespectful to any of the players there, but probably the players knew it as well. So he felt himself mad blue as a bit of a flag bearer. I think at Man United, he was one of the best of a bunch of really good side, really good players. So the emphasis for him to do as much wasn't there. But Jesus, if we're saying he wasn't fearless enough, that sort of standard would do for me.
Yeah, yes. And I think it's known, isn't it, that when Tevez, Berbatov, and Ronaldo were there, he did sacrifice himself for them. You know, he did a lot of their defensive work and everything else. And I don't think he gets the respect he deserves in the English game for some reason. I think, like, at English level, there's always been people on his back, and you think he's one of the best players that we've ever produced.
Yeah, without question. You know what he suffers from? You know, being you know, if he had a foreign name, a foreign name,
yeah,
right, you know, he would get treated with an easy target.
Yeah,
local lads, easy target. You go, I used to watch Everton, you know, and Robbie used to come with a stay, you know, and the local players, Tony Hibbert and Ozzy, got absolutely battered from the fans. You're one of us, you know, they were an easy target.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Wayne has suffers from that as well. He's British, you know. He's got great records, you know, brilliant career, and a brilliant person. And that's not patronising him, but in any way, Wayne off the field was one of the quietest, unassuming lads you could meet. Now, whether that's changed, I don't know. But I'm only telling you from the experience I had. Like John, like Graham, you get smashing lads. Wayne and Jeanette, salt of the earth people. And the kids were brought up right. But when he crossed the white line on Sunday, Wayne, he was off. He wasn't taking any prisoners. He turned into that football beast. And he probably grew about 7 or 8 inches from walking across a white line. Yeah. He just have arrived to get ready.
Yeah, one of the things you said there, which was... I really like, was he become more economical? So obviously he was raw, wasn't he, from like 16 to 22, but, and even though he's got goal records for United and England, but when he dropped back as well, his passing was as good as Scholes as well in some elements, you know, his long passing. And I think that's a great assessment. Like, as players are getting older, the game intelligence obviously goes up levels, don't they? So they realise, I don't need to make that run there because the ball's probably going to come to me feet in whatever the next two moves and things like that. Is that something you're teaching now in the coaching groups? Is it a drip down from the actual game the way it's gone now? Because it seems like a lot of the game is more about space than actual, you know, covering space, running space, than it might be trying to do technical drills. I don't know.
Well, I think the entertainers are few and far between. And I think when we talk about the best players in the world, you know, Ronaldo, Messi, Neymar, all dribblers' names get mentioned.
Your
Virgil van Dijk, who is a world-class player, he doesn't get a mention. Mm. And you're thinking, you know, it's as if, you know, everybody wants to be a Neymar, a Messi, and what's stopping them? What barrier are we placing to stop them doing it? And I refer back to what Alan said, don't turn the best dribbler into the best tackler. But the game, when we talk about economical, I give you the ball, Steve, I'm not making that run because I know you're not good enough to give it where I want it. So, you know your players, I suppose, you know, and I'm not going to pass over 40 yards to Dave in the air because he wears body armour and it bounces off him and goes about 30, 40 feet away. Yeah. It's about knowing you, and that how intelligent must Wayne have been to be able to play those passes, knowing that he can do this. I'll pass it to whoever, whether it's Ronaldo, in the air at 100 mile an hour because I know he can pull it down.
Yeah.
But when I'm passing to Tosh, I have to pass it at 10 mile an hour and I can only pass at 10 yards because Tosh has got two left feet. In a millisecond as the game's going on, how do they work that out? And it's genius, you know. It's a genius.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think he's one of the best players I've ever watched in my life, and I did love him even at United. Some of the goals he scored, but has there ever been a player that you've coached and you've thought he's genuinely got it? He's good enough. He's got the ability, but he just hasn't made it there. Because you hear a lot of stories about Ravel Morrison, don't you? And through United's academy being the best thing they've produced since George Best, which I think is a statement and a half. And you know, is there ever been any players like that you've seen and thought, oh, he or she's defo at it, and they just haven't quite got there?
Well, I think the one that a big one that jumps to mind is has Ross Barkley really gone on to the level that he should have gone on? And then the one prior to that, you would think, has Jack Rodswell ever gone on to the level the gift he had?
Yeah,
should have took him to. And it becomes, to me, I would say that it came down to timing for Jack. He wasn't, you know, for me, he wasn't ready to leave Everton in terms of he was just developing. He was consistent. His confidence was high. His floor, you know, for me, he was the best footballing centre-back we had the chance of ever producing. I know you've seen him in midfield, but you know, he was always a centre back in footy, Dave, and he was a Rolls Royce. Never got outrun, never had to make a tackle. He could just step in and take it off you. His physique, he could just prise you off the ball. And I've said it numerous occasions, and I still maintain that Jack suffered from being 6'2" when he was 7, because. Yeah. All the air balls in the air, he never had to challenge for, but he was always getting challenged. So me, 2'6", Jack's balls in, I'm trying to jump up, but I'm learning to time. Jack just stand there, dunk, you know, dunk. It just, he's heading them away all day. And then suddenly you get to 18, 20, everybody else is now an inch or two within him. Jack suddenly having to try and go back and reach and start developing as a head in the centre, as a centre back. What did he do? He's a liability. Let's move him into centre midfield. Now you've still got to be able to challenge there, but you know you've got the cover. Yeah. And I believe that Jack thinks he's the best centre back. That's his best position. And as an academy, and I include myself as part of Jack's development, I think we everything else we looked after. On the floor, all control from here down, from chest, neck down. We should have learned him to spend a bit of time just getting up and heading it, and maybe put him in games that involved a lot of, you know, physical contact.
Yeah.
Because Jack, we should have and could have done more. Ross Barkley, we should have and could have done more, because Ross wants to entertain. He wants to run. You know, he's one of the best runners of the ball that you'll see, Dave. I mean, even now, I mean, the little glimpse of Villa, the new challenge for him, you know, with Grealish to entertain us, he looked as if he was going to come back, and then he's frazzled away. But it's usually,
he got back into the England squad, didn't he, just before the Euros?
Yeah.
And I 100% agree. You know, watching Ross with Lukaku, the partnership they had, and when he was coming through, he was fantastic to watch. And they're the type of players you want to see, aren't they? And I was hoping he might have that little resurgence of Villa that he did have, gets back into England. But then, as you say, you know, I don't know whether it's a mentality thing or he's not happy there. You just can't tell.
Yeah. But it's sad. I mean, but I know the game, and I'm looking at the Euros, and I want my ass off the seat. When I go to a game, I don't want to be sitting down. I want to be standing up. He's on the, and you want to be just ready to get. Oh my God! And the excitement.
Yeah,
it's like watching Wimbledon. You just, your head's going left to right. And when I watch the Euros, big things expected from our entertainers, and then it's all oh, we were nearly there, we were so unlucky. And then you read the stats, and the stats say our entertainers spent more time on the bench than on the pitch. So your Grealishes, your Rashfords, your Sanchos, your Sackos, they never played. It went back to, you know, and again, no disrespect, George and Henderson, they turned into the fullback, Kyle Walker. They went back to type, and we weren't brave enough, in my opinion, to get the entertainers on. But they're saying there for the next Euros or the next World Cup, we've got to qualify first.
I know. And they're in, you know, a country which is essentially a desert, aren't they? You know, this was on our background, and, you know, Grealish had the season of his life. We're all scratching. Me and Steve were talking about Sancho every day. You know, we all know how good he is, what he's doing in Germany. Even Jürgen Klinsmann, who was on the commentary, was saying, the Germans cannot believe you aren't playing Sancho. Yeah. And I just thought, was it because, like, I mean, it's probably, you know, a layman's answer, but is it because Sancho plays in Germany and Gareth hasn't been out and seen enough of him, or is he just being conservative? Because he played Rice and Phillips, who are, you know, great midfielders at what they do, but they're not very creative at all, are they? Yeah. And he played Sterling and Saka in front of them too. And that was pretty much the formation throughout, unless he reverted to five at the back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's risk. You know, we can all talk, you know, and you know what? My team, you know, that I picked, you know, for the England, for that final, it would have won.
Yeah.
It never plays, does it? So we've got now across 66 million of us all picking a different side to Gareth Southgate, and we never know if it would have won or lost. We know, you know, but it never played, so we'll always say that side would have won. Now, if we knew better than Gareth Southgate, we'd be sitting where he is.
Yeah, yeah.
But give the lads, you know, don't talk about, you know, Jude Bellingham as a fantastic talent. Don't talk about how good Grealish is. Don't tell us how good Sancho is, Sacco is, and all these players. We want to see them. Yeah. Now, I understand it's difficult getting them on the field at any one time, but this Euro final was a once-in-a-lifetime. A once-in-a-lifetime. You're not going to get 6 out of 7 games at home. It's just not going to happen again.
With a winnable fixture list as well, you know, I don't want to be too pessimistic, but what a chance it was, and we got to the final, and Italy didn't even qualify for the 2018 World Cup. I know they had a great run since that, and Mancini's turned them around, but, you know, if you could pick one of the top sides in the final, you probably would have said, well, go on, we'll have a go at Italy, and we were still pretty defensive or cautious against, you know, a young Italian team with 2 Asian centre-backs, as good as they are. Like, it was a shame, you know, we all wanted to see Grealish and players like that start. And like you say, if we knew more, we'd be sitting where Southgate is. But,
yeah. But you've got to get them on the pitch. And I know there's only so many combinations you can play, Steve. But Grealish was a bit of a game changer against, when he came on, we got the 2 goals. Against Germany. You know, you're frightening everybody to death. You beat Germany. You broke the hoodoo, haven't you?
But
back to type. Safe. Let's not get beat rather than having the balls, the courage to say, let's put a statement out here. Let's go and win. Let's get 2 entertainers on here. And you know, when those 2 people have shattered and they give us a good half, we'll take them off and we've got 2 more to replace them. Yeah. You know, Foden, the season Foden's having. It's just, you can't say we've got this, that, and the other, and then not play them. And for all those academies and all those coaches who've been involved in them in their development, you must look at yourself and say, what are we doing? Are we producing players of the future? Or have we got to produce a team that functions for the future? And are we all stereotypes? So we can't, you know, I just lost with it all the way it's going. The game should be about individuals. And when you look at Italy, and I know he got injured with the Achilles, but it was Spinazzola.
No, Spinazzola.
The left back for...
Oh, right.
For this game.
He played the Chelsea guy instead, didn't he?
Yeah, but he'd done his Achilles, didn't he?
A right-footed
left back.
Yeah.
Who was shelling on, dribbling past people, could play in midfield.
Yeah, Emerson.
He played at the tournament up until the injury.
Yeah, so yeah.
He's been a zone, I think. You know, he's playing every minute. I think he tampered with his best formation, Mancini, in about the third game when they were through. He never did it again. He got them on.
How good's he?
He's good, that Chiesa. He had a fantastic Champions League campaign for Juventus as well. And they had really brave players that would get at you, wouldn't they? And with Immobile up front, he only needs half a sniff and he's going to get a goal, isn't he? But I think you're right, because the game went after Germany, he brought Grealish on. I think Denmark. Did he bring Grealish on and then subbed him again? Or was that...
Subbed him again.
What's that about? Like, resting him for the final? I don't know. It's crazy, crazy stuff.
It's fear, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just fear. And you've got no trust in those players. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to be anti anybody. I don't want to come across as anti anything, but the likes of Ratchet, Rashford, Sanko, and the penalty taker, I forget who the penalty taker was. He never trusted them in any of the games. But we'll trust you in the final to take a penalty. You know, the young, and talking about experience, if they'd have been playing with confidence, Sterling, how much confidence do you need to take a penalty? He scored 3 goals. He's going to get a night out for his performances, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's sitting down. He was number 7. How do you know it's going to go to 7?
Well, a lot of, is that up to the player, do you think, in the moment? Because surely if you're Sterling, you're going, no, I'm going ahead of Boyacá, I'm going ahead of Saka, like you put me there after the tournament about, but you're not in the reds at the time, are you, sort of thing, so.
You'd be taking the ball off them, sit down, give me the ball, I'll show you how to do it. Taking the ball off them.
Imagine in that scenario, Rooney or Gerrard coming up to like Capello and him saying, use a 6th and 7th, lads. They tell him to fuck off, take the ball. And smash it in the net, wouldn't he? And I think that's the difference. You know, you put them lads up there and it's hard. You know, they've hardly had any minutes and they're coming on to take a penalty in them circumstances. Says everything when Harry Maguire's on your second penalty, doesn't it?
And what a penalty, by the way.
Great pen,
What a penalty.
That's how you take a pen, isn't it?
Just I'd have had, you know, you had John Stones there, you had Luke Shaw. These players, the brimming with confidence.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought it was more of a risk putting Rashford in as a right back to get him on the pitch before the penalties even got taken. Because you see, Italy just raided that left side and tried to exploit it for 3 or 4 minutes. You know, it's about talent, isn't it? You know, I think the conversation, I don't know whether we've talked about it or not, but we're talking about potential. You've got all the players that you want in that squad, and it goes back to what's the point of having it if you're not given the opportunity. And I think we've got to stop being conservative. We as a footy nation, because that was conservative for me.
Definitely was. That's the British way, isn't it? We're too polite to win. It's a travesty, really. And we had it there to win, didn't we? So no, I totally agree. Would you on that 100%? The squad's there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, nice one for coming on. Anyway, it's been interesting getting your insights on stuff. So it's just proper interesting to hear stories. You know, like what you're seeing him weighing and stuff at so young, and Ross and Jack and things like that. So definitely another boost for us as well and the people we're interviewing. So, nice one for coming on. So
you're welcome, Steve. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Steve, Dave. Okay.
Yeah, nice to meet you, mate, and good luck with everything with the academies, with Melwood and that.
You're welcome. You take care, lads. I'll speak to you soon. All the best. Tell your dad I was asking about him, Steve.
Will do.
Take care. Yeah. See you. Ta-ra, lads.
Ta-ra. Ta-ra. Ta-ra.